untouchable. Seriously, we dare you to try and touch him. Bob McCowan at Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Friday, November 21st, 2014, Primetime Sports on your radio, on your television, Canada's most listened to sports talk show. It's the Friday Roundtable. Yours truly, Bob McCown, along with Ken Reed, Elliot Freeman, John Shannon, around the table. Where are we next? What haven't we talked about? This week, the Toronto Blue Jays made the first big splash of the free agent season with the signature of Russell Martin. Let's start with this. If you were going to list the priorities the Toronto Blue Jays had during this offseason, almost nobody, no, let me rephrase that, nobody would have said behind the plate is a priority. And yet, the more you think about it, the more this move has a chance to impact this team almost as much as any other move they could have made. General thoughts, Elliot, to you first.
Well, I think it's interesting considering how much conversation, like when you guys did your season-end interview with Anthopoulos and things like that, it became pretty clear that they felt they needed to address whatever is going on in their clubhouse. And Russell Martin is a guy who has a reputation for being very good at that. You know, to me, the interesting thing is I sat down today, and if you look at his numbers last year, his ops, his total bases, his home runs, when you look in the last 20 years at catchers who've equaled the season that he had last year, getting older, at age 32, there's six guys in the last 20 years. At age 33, there's three guys in the last 20 years. And by the fourth year of his contract, when he's going to be 36, there's nobody. So you're hoping that he delivers in the next two or three years, and you're hoping that his impact is as much behind the scenes as it is on the field.
Yeah, so let me paraphrase then. So statistically, it's easy to understand who Russell Martin is and what impact he'll have on your ball club.
And you expect it will decline.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the other intangibles.
Yes, that's what you're hoping here.
Ken.
Great signing. But I didn't think catcher was a problem. I thought, geez, they have to do something center field, left field, third base. Well, it's third base / second base, depending on where they put Brett Laurie. But yeah, it's so funny. Going back to the Leafs, all we kept hearing about was culture change. Well, maybe this move is the start of a big time culture change for the Blue Jays, because they really need to get people in there who know how to win. Now, of course, there's guys on their team that have been to the postseason before and whatnot, but Russell Martin's a guy that's been there seven out of the last nine seasons. This is a guy who knows how to win. He helped turn around a team in Pittsburgh that, you know, had a long playoff drought since the early 90s. So it's a culture change. It's a guy who knows how to win, and it's a guy that plays a position where guys absolutely have to listen to him, and you have to listen to what he says. And I think it's a great move, and I think it's definitely the start of more from this team. I think we're in for a very busy offseason.
You mentioned Pittsburgh. Not only a team that went 20-plus years without making the postseason, I think they went 20-plus years without playing 500.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a team that stunk for a long time.
Yeah. John.
I liked it on a couple of levels. The first one is, we have talked about this on numerous occasions on this program, is that, you know, the corporation, Rogers, had to prove to a lot of people that they really wanted to invest in the baseball team long term. And I think that when you spend $82 million on a player in free agency, that's something this organization hasn't done very many times. And I think that's important for the fan. I think that's great messaging. The second part was in driving home, listening to the two of you talk to Martin yesterday, you certainly got the sense of leadership. You certainly got the sense of real business, that he's in the business of playing baseball, and no nonsense, you know, how he's going to deal with such situations, how he's going to talk to certain pitchers and how to deal with them in those key situations and what's going to happen between now and spring training. And then as spring training turns into the regular season, I was very impressed from that. The question I have with that is, can we assume that his teammates will buy in? Because that's the other part of the process.
Yeah.
Is that they have to buy into someone saying, hey, I'm a leader. I'm in charge. I'm going to be the guy behind the plate making a lot of this, making a lot of these decisions and making a lot of things happen in the clubhouse and on the field. Will a lot of the other guys who perceive themselves as leaders buy into that?
Yeah, from outside, like a guy who obviously isn't around the baseball team a lot, his signing really said to me that all those stories at the end of the year about the issues they felt they had inside their room were very real and very serious. And I also thought it was interesting that, there was a story this week about Dickey. I guess Gibbons was asked specifically about Dickey and is he a problem? And he denied that. It's interesting to me. It says to me that they think some of their biggest problems were not necessarily performance-based, but attitude-based. And I'm curious to see what this is going to mean from here on out in the offseason.
Well, I think it's telling that, I mean, when we look at it from the outside, everybody assumes it's Jose Bautista's team because, you know, he's the big number guy. Now, I don't know if it is, but this is a guy who should get along with Jose Bautista. I mean, they played college ball together. They go back a long way. But what you were saying, Shandy, I think, will they buy into it? I think it's very important that they have the right personnel left when the season starts that will buy into it, mm-hmm. because maybe the group that they had last summer wasn't a group that would buy into it or wouldn't buy into anything, Elliot, perhaps from what we're hearing.
It's tough not to buy into your catcher. Like, you look at how many catchers have been good managers over the years.
Most of them.
Yeah, you really have you have so much command over the game. It's if you have a, like, Posada with the Yankees, like, he was, and I did two World Series where he was there, and you could tell he, like, everybody talked about Jeter. I think Posada was just as big on those teams as Jeter was.
Not the best player.
But Veritek with the Red Sox.
Yes. Yeah, but absolutely, yeah, you like, could sense the leadership.
He was the... They rallied, like, he was a guy, a big guy.
I'd be curious to think what you thought of the interview.
Well, I was very impressed with the young man. Yeah. I got exactly what I thought I was going to get from him.
Which was?
What you suggested. I think there was a sense of understanding, commitment. I'm a hard worker. Mm-hmm. I think he will provide a level of expectation for the other guys, and if he doesn't see it, I don't think he'll have any issue with addressing it. There was nothing socially about him that I didn't like. Yeah. What I really respect in him is the understanding of what you have coming. What you have now, but what you have coming. You have a new generation of young pitchers that you believe within the next couple of years are going to be the foundation for the future. Whatever that future is,
sure.
They are the foundation. To have a veteran catcher behind the plate, a leader behind the plate, a great defensive catcher behind the plate, a smart guy, all those things can only help the pitching staff, a young pitching staff. Does he have the same impact on a Burley or a Dickey that he has on a Stroman or a Norris or a Sanchez? No, of course not. And I don't think he would expect that. Everybody defers in sport. The more senior you are, the more you defer. But, and no knock against Navarro, but Navarro is at best a mediocre defensive catcher who has great limitations. I expect the Blue Jays... Well, Anthopoulos said yesterday he's going to try and trade him.
Yep.
If they can't move him, if they can't get something in return or find him a spot where he'll play on a regular basis, and that may be tough, putting him in the DH spot, considering who else they've had playing the DH spot, isn't necessarily a bad thing. He's had two good offensive years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Not as good last year as the year before, but maybe if you're not crouching behind the plate, 4 or 5 days a week, Maybe you're better offensively as a result of it. And he can hit left-handers and right-handers, and, you know, he gives you a lot of, and as a backup. The greater issue with me, and I hate to repeat myself, is I've had this feeling for a long period of time. As much as I like R.A. Dickey as a pitcher, I think having a caddy for R.A. Dickey in Josh Tolley creates a limitation that you really don't want to have, and that is I got a 24-man roster, not a 23-man roster. Josh Tolley can't give you anything off the bench on those 5 days or 4 days where he doesn't play.
The one thing I would say, Bob, is that there are teams who have won with that kind of setup.
I understand.
The Red Sox did it with Tim Wakefield and Doug Mirabelli. The Braves did it with Greg Maddux and Eddie Perez, who was a much worse offensive player than Javi Lopez was. But you got to be great. I think that's the thing. You got to. There is evidence that you can do it, but you have to be great.
I just think it's a limitation. Yeah. And with R.A. Dickey in the last year of his contract, with a performance that is pretty good, but not—it's not Cy Young. Mm-hmm. You know, he hasn't repeated the season he had with the Mets. In that scenario, I'm looking to move him.
And his knuckleball hasn't moved near as much as in Rogers Center as they thought it would.
I don't know.
You get your 200 innings out of him. That's the thing. Who else can you get the 200 innings out of? But are those 200 innings worth the fact that you have to carry his own personal catcher who's going to cost you offensively? Like it's something they're going to have to figure out.
Well, he's principally a 500 pitcher, too. That's basically what he is. You know, and that's not a front-of-the-rotation guy. You need to be better than that at the front of the rotation.
Who else is out there for the front of the rotation? And I think I know who you're going
to
say.
Well, we know the answer to that.
Yeah, we do.
And I mean, one of the interesting things about Martin's contract, it's in the first year, it averages 16 point something million a year.
Mm-hmm.
In the first year, Russell Martin's getting 7.
Yep.
That's not done by accident.
Nope.
That's done because you want room to do something else.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I am led to believe that the Blue Jays' serious interest is in John Lester.
Mm-hmm.
And that they may even break with the rule.
The five-year rule.
Would they do it for Sandoval, too?
No.
You know.
No chance.
That's interesting to me about Lester. But because I'll tell you this. Like, this, again, a guy, I'm not around the team, but I understand how media works and how teams work. The fact that Dickey's name got out in this way and Gibbons had to defend him publicly, his attitude, that says to me, that doesn't come out by accident.
There's something there.
Yeah. That is not, and that's, it could be exactly what you're talking about. So what do you think the offer is for Lester?
Well, I'm told it's a 7-year, they're talking 7 years.
And the number?
Guess?
Yeah.
140, 150, 140, 150, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Now, do you
around
think,
$20 million a year.
From what you hear, is Lester serious or is he using them as leverage?
I don't think I know the answer to that. What I know is there's, the Blue Jays haven't said no. At this point,
what I do like about the Russell Martin signing is it does take away that Blue Jays being used as leverage thing, which I've been screaming about the past few years.
He's because, a bit different.
Well, somebody actually signed a big contract.
He's Canadian.
Yeah, but somebody actually went out and actually signed with them.
Well, and here's the other thing, and I mentioned this in the first hour of the show today, and I don't know how you guys feel about that. I'm interested in your reaction to it. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Russell Martin is the point of difference in the acquisition or the interest level of a Samardzija, a Lester, one of the big free, a Shields, one of the big free agents. And I don't, by the way, I don't think the Blue Jays have any interest in anybody other than Lester, but you never know. Could be a smokescreen. But I think all things being equal, one of the factors for a pitcher, and especially a veteran pitcher, is who am I throwing to?
It doesn't, listen, Bob, it doesn't hurt, that's for sure. Yeah.
Like, I don't think Lester takes a nickel less. But here's what I said earlier. You know, I think people would be surprised when free agents sign contracts. In a great number of cases, they actually have to make a choice. It's not clear who the number one bidder is. It's not uncommon to have 2, 3 or more teams basically at the same point. Not exactly, maybe, but really around, they're in there right to the end with a dollar and cents figure. So in truth, a lot of guys sign contracts for reasons other than the money. They get to the point where they max their dollars. They look at who's left and say, okay, now what's next important to me?
Do I get a flight to like Roger Clemens did? Do I get a flight everywhere I need to go on days off?
Little things.
Yeah.
Do I want to play in that city? Do I like going to that? Do I think I want to spend 6 months of my life in that city? Do I like the organization? Do I think the team has a chance to win?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a pitcher, who am I throwing to?
Mm-hmm.
And for the whatever weight you put on the ladder, the Blue Jays' opportunity to land a pitcher, whether it's in the rotation or the bullpen, got better. Because you'd have to think there's almost nobody out there that wouldn't say, oh, I like to throw to Russell Martin. Here's one of the best pitch framers in the game. In the game. Here's a guy who throws out runners with the best in the business. I think he was fourth best last year in terms of percentage of runners thrown out.
37% around there?
He's good at a lot of things that matter to pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
And all things being equal, he makes a difference. I don't think this was lost on Alex Anthopoulos or the organization.
It can't be. It's not just one move. It's definitely not just one move. There's
well, you hope it isn't.
It can't.
Well, it's only one if
it can't.
You have your irons in every other fire.
Sure.
And they get blown out.
Right. Exactly. If it ends up being just one move, it's nice.
Here's the other thing I took from the Anthopoulos interview, and I think sometimes you have to read between the lines. And maybe you have to have talked to Alex a lot and then see what he says and then what he does after that to try and figure out what the code is. Here's what I took from the conversation yesterday. We're all sitting here saying they either got to get a second baseman or a third baseman. And they either got to re-sign Melky or they got to get a left fielder. I don't think he thinks that. I'm quite convinced he doesn't believe either of those things. He believes he can cobble together an infield and presumably with Laurie at third base, not at second base, and make it work.
I definitely got that.
Now, I don't know whether he thinks Travis is ready or not, but I think he feels like he's got an extra option if he wants to go to it, and that second base isn't killing this team. As for Melky, put an offer on the table to Melky. Melky said no. Alex said, let me know when you're done.
Right.
Yeah.
And if Melky gets a better offer from someplace, he's going to go. But nobody's so.
And they're not banging the doors down, are they?
No.
On Melky?
Yeah.
Oh, they've stopped talking.
That's what I mean. No. I'm not. I'm talking about it. You don't hear about a lot of activity with other teams with Cabrera.
I don't know what that means, though. Yeah, right. Well, I don't hear it.
I think the longer it goes, the better chances that he's coming back to the Blue Jays.
The only concern I have with that, John, is that for some reason, Major League Baseball, more than any other sport, has situations where, like, you remember Victor Martinez and how long he waited? Or Prince Fielder. Remember he waited? Mm-hmm. And still he got a ridiculous contract. So there's something about the money or if you have...
You never know.
You just never know with these guys.
No, you don't.
You know what I think he is?
But Melky Cabrera's, barely a top 10 free agent. Like most of the surveys I've seen have him anywhere from like 8th to 11th.
You know what Melky did, going back to what John was talking about? He fit. He likes it here. He wants to play in Toronto. He got, from what we saw, he got along with other guys. He had a decent bat. If you fit and you play good ball and you want to be here, doesn't that mean something?
It's almost always about the money.
Almost always about the money, true. No, but I'm just talking about not almost.
You're saying always?
Yeah. Always.
There are cases I can say, I would say maybe it's not, but I don't know about this one.
Again,
I'm talking about in the clubhouse.
We come right back to the Lester situation. If the money is basically the same, then you get into other things.
Yeah. Sure.
But until if the money's not the same, if somebody's going to pay him $2 or $3 million a year more, it doesn't matter how much he likes Toronto.
No.
He's gone.
I agree with that, but I'm just saying,
but if it's
back
close,
to what Shanny talked about with the chemistry and stuff, it looked like he enjoyed his time playing for the Blue Jays. He fit in well. To me, that's the type of player. He's probably not going to cause a lot of trouble. He's going to do his job. You know what you're going to get. He's a good fit. And hopefully he comes back, but from what I heard yesterday, I probably wouldn't bet on
him. What do you guess the offer to Melky is?
From the Jays or on the free agent market?
From the Jays. What's the offer they put on the table?
Yeah, I'd say
exactly the number.
3 at 40 or so.
3 years, $42 million.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say 3.40.
That's what I'd say.
Yeah.
3 years around $40 million. Yeah.
And the issue is term.
Well, the issue is, yeah, maybe I can get 4 years and $65 million somewhere else.
But he's one of those guys, is to Bob's point, in that 8 to 12 in level in the free agency that nobody's going to take the risk and give him four or give him that extra $3 million.
We always say that. Nobody's ever going to do it. It only takes one. And you know what, John, you know how it goes. Like, one team loses out on that first free agent and then their fans start going and social media starts going. And also, the sport is so flush with cash. It is so flush with cash.
Well, you got the Los Angeles Dodgers allegedly will trade any one of their outfielders, including Puig.
Well, I'd trade Puig because I think you can get lots for him. I think you could get lots.
Well, the Dodgers, there's a story out there that the Dodgers would trade any one of them.
Yeah.
So if you're the Toronto Blue Jays, I don't know what you got. Well,
that arm would look
now,
nice.
Now you get back to the temptation is the talent. The downside is what you talked about, the chemistry.
Yeah, that's right.
You just change the chemistry by bringing in Russell Martin. And in your point is you believe that was a key reason why they were aggressive with him.
I do believe
Are you going to mitigate that now by bringing Yasiel Puig in?
Hold on, though. Hold on. Who was one of the last teams to give Martin an offer?
The Dodgers.
Yeah. They knew what they needed to try to do, too.
If you think that one can handle the other, yeah, you do it.
Boy, that's... I don't think you go down that road.
You know what? It's funny because you talk about what Anthopoulos said, that he doesn't necessarily believe what, you know, you were thinking. And I think, like, ever since, like, the Yankees brought both Rodriguez and Jeter there, like, I think teams look at it like, give us talent and we'll figure out how it all works.
I think every team does that in every sport.
Yeah.
The manager, the owner, the coach, I can make that guy better.
Yeah.
I can find a spot for that guy.
We know he's a head case, but when I teach him my system, life will be good.
Somebody gets seduced by talent.
Sure, somebody's going to sign Colby Rasmus this winter, thinking they can turn him into the hitter he's supposed to be, because that's how major league managers and hitting coaches operate. And we saw Colby strike out, and it looks so beautiful. He's got the nicest cut, and he does. It didn't work here. It worked at times, didn't work, but they'll sign him thinking, we can fix Colby.
We just know he won't either sign in Toronto or St. Louis.
Somebody will sign Colby Rasmus at $1 million a year. 1 year deal for $1 million, maybe two.
You know
that's
what?
That's it.
What did Cabrera get coming out of the steroid?
$8 million a year. 2 years, 16.
Rasmus getting more than a million.
Yeah, Colby's going to get some cash.
Well, that gentleman.
I'll bet you a bottle of Bob McCallum wine.
I don't know who the team is. I don't know who the team is. There is no more. I don't know who the team is that signs Colby Rasmus to that kind of a contract, but I predict that general manager is going to be fired. I don't care who he is. He will be fired because you cannot give Colby Rasmus that kind of a deal.
I'm not saying it's 2 years, $16 million.
There's a boatload of guys out there.
It's more he's than
getting
a million more, a year,
he's getting
right?
more than one. That's all I'm
he's
saying.
He's getting a 1 year deal for a couple of nickels. Prove you can do it, because he's
I tell you, the day he signs, the horns that are going to go off on this show, when he signs for $5 million, $6 million, maybe for 1 year, it'll be...
Well, I could see that, but it's still stupid. What I can't see is a three-year deal for multi-millions of dollars.
No, he'll get
I don't think he's getting...
So one-year deal for next to nothing.
He'll get a few million a year.
I got another one I want to throw out that we haven't talked a lot about. Casey Janssen's on this program a couple of weeks ago. And it sounds like Casey Janssen has kind of had an encounter with reality and has acknowledged the possibility of coming back to the Toronto Blue Jays. Do you want him?
At the right price.
But he can't be your closer anymore, can he?
Well,
if he's willing to come back, then he realizes he's probably coming back. I mean, then again, he's probably not coming back in that role. But, John, you know what the volatility of closers. I'm probably saying I'm coming back as something else, but I may end up being the closer again.
Might be a nice life being, that sixth or seventh inning guy,
But if I'm the Blue Jays, I'm saying if we're bringing you back, no more of the stuff that we had last year with the trade deadline and stuff like that. That's... Yeah.
I think that's why you don't.
Right.
Well, you never know. You can always talk to a guy and say, you know, are you going to be part of the problem or are you going to be part of the solution?
Wow. Well, that's...
And are you going to fit the budget?
I got to fit the budget.
Yeah, you're not going to the bank
to get it. A lot of stuff has to happen here. Yeah. Like Colby Rasmus has to be essentially, or Colby Rasmus, Casey Jansen has to be essentially ignored in the free agent market.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays, what they would offer him would be virtually nothing.
Right.
That's what you'd bring him back at. But yeah, you can't pay him big money. But
what do you find? Like 2.5?
Well, maybe more than that, but on, you know, a 2-year deal?
Yeah, well, I was short deal, but...
So when you guys say don't bring him back as your closer, you're all assuming Sanchez is the closer? That's what you're all...
No, I'm not. I assume he's going to be a starter.
I would try him as a starter.
Well, they're going to. And I mean, there's no reason to believe he won't be effective as a starter.
There's still a couple of young guys out there that they could get as closers.
Aside from Mariano Rivera.
Oh, it's Death Valley.
It's Death Valley.
And they're developed. You don't go and get them. Right. You never know. Right. If you go out and sign a closer, I'll show you a bad contract in a couple of years.
Well, look at that. Randy Myers, BJ Ryan. Look at the history.
Look when Papelbon went to the Phillies. How'd that work out?
Papelbon, yeah.
And then Papelbon wasn't a 1-year wonder. Papelbon was good with the Red Sox for several years.
Randy Myers had set the major league record for consecutive saves and came here and his arm fell off.
Yeah. Bill Cottle. How far back do you want to go?
84. I remember Randy Myers comes here.
No, they're not going to make that mistake.
And they trade him the night the Argos are playing over at the Dome.
They're going to San Diego, don't they?
Yeah, and Chris Carpenter and Woody Williams are standing on the Argos sideline. So I run down to try and get a clip from them, and I said, "Can I get a comment from you guys about the Randy Myers trade?" They had no idea. They looked at each other and they smiled. They didn't even ask who they got. They were so happy.
Do we have to go to break?
Can you tell at some point?
Yeah. One of my favorite stories, and as soon as the Blue Jays signed Russell Martin.
Yeah.
And I know you wrote about it today.
Can you tell your story?
Oh, my God, yeah. So this is, Bob, you'll like this. So it's 2004. I'm just back from the Olympics in Athens. It's the World Cup of Hockey. And we're doing a game in Montreal. They're Canada. I can't remember who they were playing. So they said to me, the Prime Minister at that time was Paul Martin. He's going to be in the crowd tonight.
A very short window.
Yeah, he's going to be in the crowd tonight. We want you to interview him in his seat. And he's agreed to it. So I said, okay, yeah, no problem. So it comes to the time. I go up to the area where he's sitting. I'm waiting for a whistle. So I'm standing out in the concourse. And this person comes up to me and he says, who are you interviewing? He didn't know who I was. He saw me with the microphone. I said, I'm interviewing the Prime Minister, Paul Martin. He goes, oh, well, are you a baseball fan? I go, absolutely. I like baseball. And you have to understand, I'm about to interview the Prime Minister, so my head is purely focused on that. And he says to me, well, you know, I hear Russell Martin of the Dodgers is here tonight. You should probably interview him. And I go, I'd love to. Where is he? And of course, it was Russell Martin who was talking to me. But my head was so wrapped, I didn't even think about it. Like I was not really paying attention to him. But there were people with me, and they could not stop laughing. Yeah. It was hilarious.
So you did interview him?
No. We couldn't find him. He actually disappeared that night.
You couldn't find Russell Martin? No. He was standing right in front of you.
No, but he told us where he was sitting, and when we went back, he was gone.
Did you interview the Prime Minister?
Yes. Martin gave me his email, and I emailed him, and I said, you know, I'm sorry I missed you. We went back to your seat. If you're ever at another game, I'd be happy to make it up to you.
That's funny.
I never ran.
That's a good story. I like that story.
Oh, man. It was funny.
We'll take the break and come back with more. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go! Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcasts at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before the hour, it's a Friday, and the roundtable is assembled. Elliot Friedman is there, John Shannon is there, and way down there is Ken Reed. Adrian Peterson suspended by the National Football League for the remainder of the season without pay. Did Roger Goodell get this one right, Ken Reed?
Yes, and I also was quite enlightened today and thrilled when I read a story that Adrian Peterson said he's no longer going to hit kids with a switch. I thought that that's very enlightening. Way to go, Adrian.
John Shannon, did he get it right?
I guess in one level he got it right. I really do struggle with sports leagues being held even by themselves at a higher level than society. If and when the state of Texas or the state of New Jersey have finished with the punishment of Mr. Peterson or Mr. Rice, you wonder why they can't just go back to do their regular jobs.
It happens in companies all the time, though.
Give me an example outside of sports.
Well, look at, for example, remember who was the MP in Ontario a few years ago?
Oh, that's who, I think public officials are much different than private employees.
I think people care more about sports athletes more than they care about public officials. But also there was a big lawyer, I can't remember the name, but there was a lawyer, there was a big merger in Ontario 2 years ago, and there was a lawyer, they brought him in from the States, and he was fired after a Christmas party. And, you know, that's the one thing that people are forgetting here is just because you're cleared or haven't been charged or get a low sentence, there are always issues that work related issues. Always.
We can't name the lawyer, but we can all name Adrian Peterson.
Was on the front page.
But what I'm saying is right now we can't name that lawyer, but we can all name Adrian Peterson because athletes are held in that higher regard. I'm cool with them being disciplined strictly like this.
I understand it. I sympathize with it a bit, but there's part of me that says, why do they pay a different price? Why do they? Sometimes I don't understand why they. I mean, they're in the spotlight. They have received for the most part, Elliot. A lot of those people that you say get treated the same way, their names aren't on the front page of the paper.
And you know what? There's a pretty big case going on in media right now.
A guy who hasn't been charged with anything.
And
he got fired.
And he got fired.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Companies
protect themselves.
Yeah. And the problem is that the CBC could end up having to reinstate him at some point, too.
And we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah.
Would you be in favor of Ray Rice being allowed to play in the National Football League?
Personally, no, but I mean legally.
Well, but legally. Then what's the difference between he and Peterson?
Well, that's my point.
Neither one of them essentially wound up with jail time.
Well, that's my point. My point is that the National Football League has a different code than the state of New Jersey and the state of Texas when it comes to a punishment. I struggle with it. I understand why it happens. Mm-hmm. I know why it happens. I think that the role models, and as Charles Barkley used to say, there aren't role models.
See, I don't have a problem with that, John. I think you got to think it through more. That's what I think. I think you got to, if you look at hockey, and I know this is a bad example, but the National Hockey League punishes players for things that happen on the ice that if you did it off the ice, you'd go to jail for, but nobody's charging them off the ice for these kinds of things. There is an imbalance and inequity. There is a distance between professional sports and real life.
And personal conduct.
And I think it's within the, I think it, it's, it should be mandated that there is a level of privilege that comes with being a professional athlete and being afforded and accorded the benefits that come with that. But there is responsibility.
But some would say that you pay with it with the lack of privacy, with the public notoriety that can be both positive and negative. There's always, and I mean, can you get a fair trial if you're a public sports figure? Because everything's been plastered in the media.
Yeah,
the
hard thing is for a high profile guy to get convicted. That's the hard part. Not getting acquitted. O.J. Simpson walked out of a trial, walked away a free man. I mean, does anybody at this point in time think O.J. Simpson didn't do it? O.J. Simpson got off because he's O.J. Simpson, and he had the benefit of the financial wherewithal to hire great attorneys, and because he's O.J. Simpson.
Or district attorney.
Well, yeah. All of those things were factors.
Mm-hmm.
The Rice got off with a slap on the wrist. Peterson, in a court of law, got off with a slap on the wrist. I don't think either of us thinks that what those two guys did is acceptable.
I know, Bob, it wasn't acceptable. It was totally unacceptable.
If I'm Goodell, and I'm no fan of Roger Goodell, believe me, but if I'm Roger Goodell, it's my responsibility to say, I don't care what the judicial system did or did not do. This is not the kind of behavior that I want representing the National Football League.
Okay.
Now, Adrian Peterson is appealing. As is his right.
And he should.
As is his right.
He should.
No so problem. We don't know where this thing lands ultimately. And doesn't Ray Rice have a suit too?
He's appealing because, but they made a mistake. The NFL made a mistake with him. They suspended him twice, and you can't do
and
that.
And then, and.
Oh, I'm not issuing.
And
I'm not,
Baltimore released him.
Yeah. I'm not issuing a comment on the relative appeals. I'm just saying they both have appeals.
And the NHL is about to go through this, too, once this whole Voinov thing is done with. Whatever the result is, they're going to have the same issue.
The interesting thing on the Voinov one is that he's still going to – the process has him still being paid.
Yes, which is what they did with Peterson until the
charge was done.
Yes, they're definite follow there.
Yeah, and I think we all understand that. Whether we agree with it or not, we understand why that's being done.
Yes.
I was going to raise another topic, and you guys went off in the Voinov thing, and I can't remember what I was going to suggest.
Was it about the great depth in the panel?
I'm pretty sure that wasn't it.
We're all being traded for
Philip Liners. I suppose I hate to move away from this topic because I had something someplace else I wanted to go with this, and it's just not popping into my head. Before we move off, though, while I'm thinking about this, are we setting a new bar for professional sports in general, or certainly the National Football League, with Goodell's actions here, and maybe more importantly, if they hadn't screwed up the Rice thing so much, would they have felt compelled to be hard ass with Peterson, and would the National Hockey League have felt compelled to do what they did with Voinov, if not for this new environment?
Thank goodness that TMZ got that video of what went on in the elevator, because...
Otherwise, we wouldn't know.
Otherwise, we wouldn't know, and I hope we're setting a new bar.
Ray Rice would be playing, and nobody would be saying boo.
Like one of the producers in our newsroom said about the Adrian Peterson thing and the Adrian Peterson appeal. Sure, he's got the right to do it under his union, but they said, where's the union for that little kid? You know, and... I hope we're setting a new bar, because I think professional athletes, everybody should understand that this type of behavior isn't acceptable. And when we see it from professional athletes, from people that a lot of society look up to, and that's when you got to step in. And that brings us back to the conversation of, you know, we have to see severe discipline for this, because whether these guys like it or not, they are role models.
You know, I don't think there's any doubt that Voinov's suspension is because of Rice.
Agreed.
I don't think you can argue that. You know, you talk about if Rice wasn't seen, would the same things have happened? You know, maybe not, but I wonder in Peterson's case, because there are photographs, I think he was going to get in trouble no matter what. Like, you see those pictures of that child, even if the Ray Rice video had never come out, I can't imagine that Peterson would be unscathed.
I just remember where I was going to go. The decision by the commissioner, in my mind, was completely, with regard to Peterson, was completely substantiated by one fact and one fact alone. At no time has Adrian Peterson apologized or acknowledged what he did, including...
Last night?
No. Well, not going to the hearing.
The meeting on Friday.
Yeah. Right. Which, in my view, left the commissioner absolutely no choice.
Well...
And maybe that's what he wanted. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be able to bring the hammer down. And maybe he would have done it anyway. But Peterson's refusal to publicly apologize or acknowledge that he understood that he made a mistake, and then not to do that in front of the commissioner when he had the opportunity, I don't know where he got his legal advice.
Rusty Harden.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole thing about the not going to see the commissioner is simply because the Players Association argued he shouldn't have to do it. So he's a pawn in that battle on that thing. He gave an interview last night to USA Today, and, you know, he did say that he will never, as Ken mentioned, he will never do that again. But he was not apologizing. You know, there's no question about that. Because, and now, as you know, Bob, it's all the lawyers. The lawyers are saying, don't apologize, don't apologize, don't apologize. And that's the problem, is that the human side gets taken out and the legal side gets put in.
In the last couple of minutes, the Bills-Jets game has been moved from Buffalo, where they're up to there in snow, to Monday night in Detroit. Now, that's not particularly consequential one way or the other. They can't play in Buffalo. They're looking for another place to play. Mm-hmm. But as some have pointed out, did the Buffalo Bills deliberately say no to Toronto? Not that we know that anybody asked or offered. I don't know whether they could have done it, couldn't have done it. I don't know whether there was even any dialogue here. But was this a deliberate attempt by the Buffalo Bills to distance themselves from the Toronto debacle?
Did cross my mind that Toronto would be an option, I must admit.
I thought it was the first option.
I think Peter King tweeted that if he was thinking of options for the Bills to play in, I think Toronto was very high on his list. And to me, when Peter King does that, he's got a reason to do that. So I am pretty curious about it.
Well, it fits because there's been a relationship, mm-hmm. because you have a stadium that's empty, I assume they could get it ready. Mm-hmm. Because, and maybe most importantly, if you look at where the snow fell, it all fell in the southern half of Buffalo and south of Lake Erie. You go north, there's no snow. It's easier for Buffalo fans to get to Toronto than it is to, well, Detroit's a lot farther away.
Aren't they giving away free tickets in Detroit for this game, I heard today? Well, I mean, at least some people here would have paid.
The only thing is there's precedent for it to be in Detroit. If you look at the same problem, they had the Metrodome in Minnesota, and they needed to play the game quickly. They ended up playing their home game at Ford Field as well.
Would passports be a problem for a number of players? I'm just thinking, would they have passports prepared?
The Bills have played here, right?
Right, they have, but not everybody on that roster has. I'm just thinking, you know, would that be a technicality?
I think right now you pretty much have to get to have a passport if you're an NFL player.
That's a question for Russ Brandon, though. Or if it was a league decision because they know that they can have it NFL ready right away.
Is there any reason why Toronto would have said no?
Well, the only thing
is, NFL
ready is different than CFL ready. And there are things like communication systems, Bob. They, you know, every replay systems need to be put in place.
We've had how many games here, though?
I'm just saying. But
6, 8, 10, how many games?
When you're able to prepare 7 to 10 days ahead or 2 months ahead, it's a lot different than preparing 3 or 4 days ahead.
I suppose.
Here's the bigger question, Bob. If they did play it here, would you have gone anyway?
No.
Oh, there you go.
I didn't go when they were here before.
Well, there you go.
I just found it quite fascinating that it was sort of off the radar that people went, well, we can't. First, they were going to play Sunday and then get people to shovel the snow. Then we're going to play Monday and get people to shovel the snow. Now we're going to play Monday, but we can't find any people who want to shovel the snow for $12 an hour. So we're going to go to Detroit. And I thought that, well, I thought you liked Toronto. I thought you coveted Toronto as
could have gone to Cleveland.
Another market. Browns aren't at home.
Cleveland's a lot closer.
Did Cleveland get hit by this, though?
Not as bad. Not as bad.
I think it was just a 500-yard radius in Buffalo. They just get all the snow in the world.
Oh, I think it was 3 feet. I think it was a strip three feet wide.
Yeah.
Right down I-90. That'll do it for us. Music's playing, and we got to get out of here. Have yourselves a swell weekend for Mr. Friedman, Shannon, and Reed. Good night from Toronto. Sticks up.